recording. Can you just speak once? I want to see the waveform.
Hello, mic check. 1, 2.
Yeah, that's perfect. Input level is also fine. Cool. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Orbital, the Gadgets 360 podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about the Apple event that took place just a short while back. Now, in this Apple event, we were not expecting the launch of the iPhone, and yet there were some rumors online that were claiming that no, the iPhone may launch in this. Why are they holding a 2-hour long event if they are not going to launch an iPhone, and that too in September? But unfortunately, this year, which is 2020, is pretty different from every other year out there because of the coronavirus pandemic, and the iPhone production cycle has been delayed a bit. The new iPhones are coming in October, so the announcement around iPhones will happen next month most probably. But until then, we got some pretty interesting things. The most interesting of these was the fact that all the Apple software operating systems, iOS 14, watchOS 7, and a bunch of others, they launched with a notice of 48 hours, I think, or maybe slightly less than that. And we had some new products, such as the Apple Watch Series 6, the Apple Watch SE, which is an affordable version of the Series 6, if you may call it that. We also saw the new iPad Air, which interestingly got the iPhone 12 series as processor before the iPhone 12 series showed up, which is also something we'll discuss a little later. And we did see another iPad, which is the iPad 8th gen. And finally, we saw the Apple One family subscription bundle announcement. So there's a lot of things to talk about. And we have our, well, formerly in-house and currently friend of the podcast, Prishit Devrukkar. Hi, Prishit.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, Prishit, listen, I forgot your designation and what you do.
Let's just say I'm a digital media consultant, but I primarily work with this company called Readle that makes apps for iOS and Mac.
Yeah, so every time I speak to Precious, his designation keeps changing. He gets like a lot of promotions, so it's a little hard to keep track of this. So anyway, Prishit, good to have you here. For those who don't know, Prishit was also here with us during the WWDC podcast episode, and that was a fun episode for sure. And this time around, again, he's back because he is an Apple enthusiast. He's been in the Apple ecosystem and writing about all things Apple for, I think, 10 years now or a little more?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there it is. Well, an expert here to comment about, you know, all these things as far as, you know, we are concerned from an Indian perspective. Okay, so first, I think I would like to talk about the thing that was the most interesting for me, which is the iOS 14 launch. I think this is probably the first time that it has happened, at least as long as I've been covering technology, that Apple announced that the iOS, the final build, is going to ship within some 48 hours of the keynote. I really don't know how to react to that news still. I'm still reeling from the effects of slogging for the last 48 hours covering all things Apple. But how do you feel about it, Prishit?
Yeah, I think everyone was caught off guard. This, like you said, was the first time that they did such a launch. They just did the keynote and announced that it's releasing tomorrow. Basically, they didn't give the developers any time to prepare their final builds, because what they usually do is they'll put out a press release or email to the developers saying that, you know, you can now submit your builds, and there's usually a week's time or more to for the OS to release and the apps to be available on the App Store. But this time, they just caught everyone off guard. There was no release of the GM build. There was no release of the final Xcode version, which developers have to use to prepare their apps for the App Store. So everyone had to scramble in these 24 hours and get their builds ready, because otherwise what usually happens is if you don't be on the App Store on day one, there's a less chance that Apple features your app on the App Store. So everyone had to scramble and get the apps ready.
Yeah, so I'm not happy about this move at all. I think it was very un-Apple-like to do this in a haphazard manner. We've never seen this before, and it's actually a slightly worrying sign for me, honestly. Now, I'll tell you my concerns about this. We did see some apps that were featured, but did not exactly have the features that they were featured for. For example, I think Tanmay, another friend of the podcast who develops this app called Sur and Vero SMS, so he had pointed out that Things was featured over there, but Things did not roll out widget support yet. So it was featured in that section. I think that was one of the examples of this.
Yeah, but I think it came out a couple of hours after that.
Yeah, but don't you think like it's a little bit odd to see this kind of a thing happening in the first place.
It is. But the thing is, the editorial team of the App Store and the dev relations team don't really work hand in hand, I would say. So, I'm pretty sure because the version would have been submitted and was waiting review or maybe was waiting developer release, and somehow the word got to the editorial team that, you know, this is one of the ma because Things is one of the major to-do apps on iOS, has won several awards as well. So the editorial team would have been like, you know, we want to feature this, and they would have gotten word that maybe it's about to release.
Yeah, and probably like a bit of a timing goof up. So let's, I mean, fine. I mean, I can forgive that, you know, a little bit of a mistake. But what I don't really like here is that I think that in this kind of a year when everybody's already struggling with work from home and lockdown restrictions and other things, you really should not be catching people off guard like this and putting them through a crunch culture, you know? Like, see, I had to sit and slog for 2 days to get all our Apple coverage out there. And even now, I think just a couple things are remaining, which will be done, you know, by tomorrow. But if you think about it, quite a few developers were tweeting that their iOS 14 features are not ready. They will not be able to ship it because this is a difficult year. They didn't have any notice on this. And quite a few other people were just, you know, we saw multiple people tweeting that, okay, it's going to be a long night. And they were working overnight to get their apps ready because, like you said, if you're not featured, like if you're not ready with the feature on day one, the chances of you getting featured and getting that marketing boost from the App Store are quite low. So that is why I'm a bit unhappy about this, you know, decision to just ship things just like that. And let's not even forget that it's not only iOS 14, right? iPadOS 14, WatchOS
WatchOS.
7, tvOS, I think everything shipped, right? So it was, I mean, I really am not happy with Apple for doing, you know, it in this year of all years. In normal circumstances, when people were able to work at 100% efficiency, that would have been slightly more, how would I say it, forgivable. But in this year, I'm really not happy with this.
Yeah, I think a couple of publications even did articles saying that, you know, developers are not happy. They had quotes from a few developers, exactly what problems they faced. And Apple didn't really announce the time also when it will be released. They just said tomorrow, and everyone was waiting at, you know, 10:30 a.m., 10:30 p.m. IST, so wondering when it's coming, when it's gonna come out, when it's gonna come out. And I think it came just after midnight. So everyone, like I said, everyone was just like clueless about what's going to happen and when it's gonna land.
Yeah, true that. Even I was pretty confused, you know. So the problem that we faced was, I think on stage, Tim Cook had announced that it would launch on September 16th, and we just assumed without actually checking for some reason that, like every year, we'll get it at 10:30 p.m. IST, and that probably means, you know, 10 a.m. or whatever it is in California. So we were all waiting at that time, and we were like, "Arey, nahi aaya, it's not here yet, it's not here yet." And that was a bit of a disappointing thing. And finally, around like you said, slightly past midnight, I started seeing tweets that, okay, it's here, it's here, it's here. And then by that time, like, I had actually, we were supposed to publish some things, so I had actually said, it's okay, like 10:30 p.m. I've been sitting here waiting for this release to show up, and the India website says September 17th, but it doesn't give a time or anything, so we'll just skip this and publish it the following morning. So it was, well, it could have been planned better, let's just say that. But, you know, now that it's here, well, what can people look forward to? What did you like about this final release that you've been using?
So I think one of the headlining features of this release is widgets, and everyone says that, you know, they've been on the Android platform for so many years, and it's finally on iOS in a good way. And from what I've seen, including our own apps at Readle, the design of the widgets and the functionality they have, the whole experience is just nicer on iOS. I may be biased here, but from what I've used in the last few weeks, you know, beta testing a few apps and using them, I just prefer the whole experience over here.
I think the ability to set the default browser and email, that's another really nice thing to have, even though I'm not gonna like talk too much about it, considering it's a feature that's been there on literally every other platform apart from iOS. It's just crazy how long it took them to get here.
Yeah, but
So
they even messed that up when the GM released.
yeah, so you're talking about the email app, right?
The default browser app and the email app, the functionality that they offered in this release, where everyone is excited that you can finally set default apps. There's a couple of bugs that are going to annoy users for sure. The first one being that when you set a default browser app or a default email app and you reboot your phone, the preferences are lost. So you go back to Safari and Mail app being your default apps again. So you have to keep setting them if you reboot your phone. And the other one is if you've set a new default email app, let's say if you use Spark as your default email app, if you tap on a Mail to link in Safari, it will still open the default Mail app instead of Spark. So there's a workaround for this being that you have to delete the Mail app from your phone after you set Spark, and it will work correctly. And hopefully Apple will fix this in a 0.1 release.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it will be fixed. These really sound like, at least the Safari one, it sounds like an oversight. The other one that you mentioned, that reboot thing, that sounds like a bug. It doesn't sound like something that, you know, people intentionally did or something, or just forgot about. It definitely sounds like, you know, one of those things that we've seen multiple years, right? It's not like this is a new problem. Like the first release that comes in, a lot of features don't work properly. Like I remember when they first launched those, that share sheet, you know, you could like change the apps that show up in the share sheet and the actions.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so at that time in the first release, you couldn't, like if you move things around, like let's say you wanted the copy function to be the first one, and let's say you wanted Tweetbot to be the last in the list or whatever, you couldn't change the order in the first one. It wouldn't remember it. And then I think it took them a 0.2 release or something that happened later, 0.0.2 or something, when it finally got fixed and it started remembering your preferences. So,
you know, maybe they should have given a little bit of testing time to developers.
Yeah.
Because even the functionality for apps to, you know, be set as default apps, that those entitlements, the Apple did not give them till the very last minute. So I think Chrome only got that functionality a few days before the release, public release. And even it's a few email apps that I know, they only got that entitlement very late into the cycle. So I think just a few days before the final release is when they got it. So there was no time to actually test out these functionalities.
Yeah, that's what. And I think we were running the betas and trying to set default email and browser apps on our phones. But I think browsers were still working reasonably well. Default email apps could not be set, right? Like you said. So yeah. I think it only showed up like after the final build released. Because I think one of the things was that Apple has to enable it from their end and then developers can enable it. So before, you know, like you said, before Apple allowed people to enable that setting, it could not be done. So that was another thing that was missing. But still, lots to look forward to. I am really liking a few things, especially on the iPad, where that Spotlight search has become so much more powerful now, and it doesn't take up the entire screen anymore. So you can still see whatever is going on in the background. And picture-in-picture has also been a bit of a game changer for me, because I realized that I am one of those people who does a lot of FaceTime video calls. And in that, finally, if you hit the home button or you go back to the home screen, the person's video stays on screen and it doesn't disappear. And the other person doesn't get that horrible message of video paused when you do that. So now they can't find out what you're doing on the phone. You can sit and play games while talking to people and they will not find out. So yeah, that has been a really good thing. And the final feature that I really like is, if you go into multiple sub-menus inside settings or any other place in iOS, there is a back button on the top left, right, usually.
So you can tap and hold that.
Yeah, and you can see like different pages over there, and you can just jump to those pages instead of like hitting that back button 4 or 5 times. It's such a small feature, but such a delight to use now that it's here. So these are the things that I like about it, about iOS. And anything else you want to highlight, or should we move on?
I really like the scribble feature that they introduced on iPadOS.
Yeah, does it work without an Apple Pencil?
No.
Yeah, that's, well, a bit of a bummer, because I don't have an Apple Pencil.
Without the Apple Pencil, you'd just be moving things around on the screen, right? It wouldn't know whether you're trying to write something or move things around.
Yeah, true that. That's, it's completely fair, but it's just that I can keep whining about how I can't use this feature. So I'll keep that entitlement for this podcast. But yeah, definitely, like, it looks pretty interesting. The scribble feature, what it basically allows you to handwrite things, and it converts it to searchable text or editable text, right?
Yeah.
So lots of interesting use cases there. And even like in general, if you draw a note or something inside the Notes app, you can like select that text and paste it into Safari as a search term or something. That's quite nice. You know, it's like OCR on steroids.
Yeah, they've done a lot of improvements with the pencil and on the iPad OS. So that's nice to see.
Yeah, definitely. This year has been a little, I would say, quiet on the iPhone side, but on the iPad side, especially with the accessories, lots of lovely improvements. Like if you're a heavy iPad user, then you know it's a great thing.
True. There have been a lot of improvements for things that people don't use in India. For example, the Messages app got a lot of improvements. The Maps app got a lot of improvements. But like I personally don't use those apps at all, so there's not really anything to talk about.
Yeah, Messages I use a lot. iMessage is where I have a lot of people, so I will definitely be using that. They have that message pinning thing and mentioning people in groups and replying to specific chats. It's like these things that we've been waiting for since, I don't know, 3 years now have finally showed up. So a lot of good things there. But yeah, Apple Maps, no, unfortunately, don't use it. Especially now, I mean, where do I go in Apple Maps? My building's terrace. I don't think I need that right now. Yeah, and I wish I had an Apple Pencil. Well, someday I'll turn into a Picasso or something. Maybe at that time we'll get it.
There's so much more you can do than that.
Then Picasso?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I'll just pretend that he didn't write anything because I don't know anything about Picasso apart from his paintings. So, yeah. Anyway, chalo. So moving on. Before we talk about the hardware, I just want to give a quick mention to the Apple One subscription bundle. Now, there are multiple tiers to this. There's an individual tier, which is at 195 rupees per month, includes Apple Music, Apple Arcade, which is the gaming subscription, and we have iCloud 50 GB, and finally we have Apple TV Plus. So all these four services combined will definitely cost you a lot more than 195 rupees. So that seems a great deal in India. In the US is $15 per month, so you are actually getting an insane price for all of these things. Similarly, we have a family plan on the Apple One subscription bundle, which is 200 GB of iCloud storage, Apple Music family plan, again 6 people can use it. Now these two things are what I use exactly, and I am paying 368 rupees per month for these two. Now with Apple One, I will be paying 365 rupees per month whenever Apple One rolls out for these two and Apple Arcade and Apple TV Plus. So sign me up, Apple. Like, I want to save 3 rupees.
Imagine how many Hajmola candies you can buy.
Yeah, actually, are they still 50 paise or is it 1 rupee now?
I have no clue. But you'll be saying 3 rupees every month, so that's a lot. Yeah,
true that. And getting two more services worth, I think, 198 rupees per month. So, yeah, saving 200 rupees, 201 rupees overall, I think, by getting
on the
this
family plan. Yeah.
And also, I mean, we have to remember, right, that the family plan is something that can be shared by 6 people. So I'm pretty sure already in India, people are wondering how to add people to their Apple family and, you know, split the cost. So that's going to be fun.
I'm sure a few people are already doing that.
Yeah, definitely. The only thing is that it's not like sharing a Netflix account, because if you add somebody to your Apple family, then they will definitely share your iCloud storage also. And, you know, then it's a little bit more complicated than just saying, ki, aray, no, you should not use this much iCloud storage. Because it's not like you can limit it, right? Some in the 200 GB plan, for example, in my family, I am using some 87 or 90 GB of storage. And 5 other people are managing easily in under 100 GB. So, you know, shouldn't I be paying more, like, in terms of the share? Let's say if some people decide to split it and one person will hog 80 GB, other person will take 20 GB. So it's a bit more complicated than that. But anyway, so those were the two plans that are available in India, and absolutely phenomenal savings. I will be signing up day one. What about you?
Unfortunately, as much as I want to do that, there are some limitations that, you know, don't allow me to do that, because I have a US account for the store account and an Indian account for the iCloud account. It's been like this for over a decade now. And because of that, I won't be able to enjoy the India pricing because it's a US account. But otherwise, it's a damn good pricing for these services. And like you said, most people will have two or more services already. So it's an easy decision for them to switch to the Apple One plan.
Yeah, definitely. It does make a lot of sense if you're invested in, even I would say, if you're just using one thing, which is iCloud, it makes a lot of sense, especially on the family plan, because iCloud alone costs 219 rupees per month for 200 GB, and for 365, you're getting three more services. So might as well just, you know, put in that extra money. Apple Arcade is also pretty exciting. The only reason I haven't signed up is that I know I don't have the time to play those many games, and I can't justify spending $100 a month on something I won't use that much. So now, well, with Apple One, I'll 100% be on Apple Arcade, and I'll finally play some of those games, and I won't feel bad about it because I'll be saving 3 rupees while enjoying Apple Arcade. So that's what I feel. Anyway, the one thing that I'm upset about is that the Apple One Premier subscription plan is not coming to India. That is, the Premier plan includes 2 terabytes of iCloud storage, all the other services that we mentioned before. Apart from that, Apple News Plus and Apple Fitness Plus, which is a new service Apple introduced at this event. It's basically something I'd written in one of my Apple Watch Series 4 or 5 reviews. I forgot which one it was, that Apple does a great job in letting you log your workouts and letting you do your workouts, but they really have room to introduce a training service here so that people who are not really familiar with fitness can get into it and can, you know, make the most of the ecosystem around Apple Watch, especially for fitness apps, which is just pretty good because the device has found its niche in fitness. So all of these things are available in the US at $30 per month. So the pricing tiers in the US are $15, $20 and $30 per month. The premium plan is not coming to India, presumably because Apple News Plus and Fitness Plus are not yet in India. So the moment those two services show up, I think it'll be an easy decision to bring it here. But I'm still upset because I'm the kind of person who would love to have that 2 terabytes of iCloud storage at a slightly lower price instead of paying the full 750 rupees per month for that.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, but at this point, it's not an option. So, well,
Apple News itself isn't available in India, right?
No, it isn't.
Yeah, so I don't think Apple News Plus is coming anytime soon.
Yeah, so from what I know, now there is a news widget on the whatever that widgets pane on iOS, but the news app itself, I don't think it is available either. So I don't know how this works, if that app exists or not, if there's some phantom app hiding inside the OS which is showing you those articles from NDTV and other sites.
From what I know, there is the app exists on the OS. You just have to change the region and it shows up automatically.
Yes, so by default it's probably then not there, but either way, there is, you know, that once that thing is fixed, we'll probably have, you know, the premier plan showing up, and we'll definitely be signing up on day one. I mean, not you, Prishit, but, you know, the rest of us.
I don't know why they restrict the Fitness Plus thing, though, because from what I know, those are just videos, right? It's not like a live thing where the instructor is actually telling you what to do.
Yeah, I mean, those are videos. The interesting thing about Fitness Plus is, though, that it syncs with your Apple Watch and shows you your data live on the screen. So you don't have to keep checking your watch to see like how many calories you burned and all that. And there are some reactive elements to it. So if your heart rate is at a certain level, then the instructor will say certain motivational messages. So it's like a choose your own adventure type of a thing for fitness in some ways.
Yeah, but none of that is geo-restricted, right? I mean, what is technically stopping them from releasing it in other countries?
If I were to guess, it probably will be that, you know, their biggest markets for Apple Watch are not India and not many regions. They probably launched it in the biggest markets first and will eventually roll it out here. So technically, I don't know what is stopping them. It's probably just a matter of optimizing the service for certain regions before, getting it out there, or maybe like just testing out, I don't know, how it performs in the few regions that they launch first and seeing how it goes. I think they brought in... was TV Plus delayed in India? I don't know. I don't remember now. Arcade was definitely there pretty much at launch, if not like on day one.
I think TV Plus came at the same time too, because they had a bunch of original TV shows, right?
Yeah, so that's what, right? Basically, it's the services they think will do well in India, they show up ASAP. With News Plus and Fitness Plus, I'm not sure if they see that the market is that big. Especially if Fitness Plus is Apple Watch dependent. So yeah, maybe it's a function of that alone. Anyway, so I think now is a pretty good time to start talking about the hardware. Prishit, you want to pick any of these things, or should I just go ahead and talk about the Apple Watch?
Go for it.
Okay, I think it's a nice segue anyway. So the Apple Watch Series 6 and the Apple Watch SE were launched at this event. But the most surprising thing was that the Apple Watch Series 3 continues to be there in the market at the same price as before, which is $200 in the US. And the India price is, what, something like 20-something thousand. I forgot the
Yeah.
exact price of that. It was
I think it's
25
around
thousand.
that.
Yeah, 25,000 or so, I think. So, yeah, good to have that watch still in the market. But the Apple Watch SE is at 30,000 in India, and the Series 6 is at a very affordable price of 40,900 rupees for the base 40 mm, 40 mm, and I think GPS only. That was
Yeah,
the
Wi-Fi
things.
model.
Yeah. So, well, Series 6 has that blood oxygen level monitoring thing, right? I think it was SpO2 is what it's called.
Yes.
So it can basically be your pulse oximeter. So in case you want to see how much blood oxygen is there, which is quite useful in these times when I think we have a worldwide pandemic going on. If your blood oxygen level drops, that's apparently one of the symptoms of having COVID. But don't quote me on that. I'm not a medical expert.
Neither is the feature a medical grade feature.
Yeah, true that. But most people, like most of these pulse oximeters that I've been seeing now out there, even at so many clinics, they're all these really affordable ones that people buy from Amazon. Like the brands I can just recognize. You can get it for
Right.
like 1,000 rupees or so online. So I am reasonably confident without using the device that it'll do a fairly accurate job based on what I've seen with the heart rate stuff that they've put on the watch. So, you know, that's probably the headline feature. And apart from that, you get some live altimeter and a bunch of other, you know, tiny little tweaks and all that. But the real interesting product for me is the Apple Watch SE, which does not get that blood oxygen monitoring feature, I think. But it does get the live altimeter and a bunch of other things. And I
Yeah,
don't know if.
it doesn't get the blood oxygen meter, and it doesn't get the ECG app.
Yes. So I think, honestly, I can live without those two things. What about you?
Yeah, I think the SE makes for a good app for most people, and like you said, the blood oximeter is available on Amazon for like $1,000 or so. So those 10,000 extra for that you would pay for the Series 6, I don't think it's that worth it.
Yeah, true
Unless
that. So,
you really want the always on display, which is not there on the SE.
yeah, so that is the thing that really confuses me a bit. So, with watchOS 7, we now have sleep tracking as well. And what I'm hearing is that, well, most people who have the always on display enabled on their Apple Watch Series 5, including me, don't get a battery life of more than one day. So, most people are overnight chargers, right? Like you put the Apple Watch on the charging cradle at night, you wake up in the morning, you start using it again. So when are you going to use sleep tracking on that device? And if always on display reduces your battery life, why would you use that feature?
Yeah.
Because if you disable that always on display, the battery life goes up to 2 days. Even now, like I've been using my Series 5 for a year or so now. I charge it like maybe almost at the end of the second day. Like if I charge it overnight, it will last me till about 7 or 8 p.m. on the second day if I disable always on display, and that battery life is quite valuable to me. So at least one night I can now use sleep tracking. As you know, every alternate day I can use it. But if you actually really want to use that feature, you'll have to change your charging habits. You'll have to charge it in the morning or something, which
Right.
honestly is a bit inconvenient because I've just left it on the charger sometimes and forgotten that I have to wear it, and suddenly it's noon and I can't close my stand rings anymore.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot.
Yeah, so that is one problem. But from what I know, you can now change your stand goals as well
Yes,
on
that's a
watch.
WatchOS 7 feature.
Yes. So finally you can like tell the watch that, okay, listen, I don't want to exercise 30 minutes a day. It is not possible. Please let me make it 15 minutes. And I don't want to stand for 12 hours in a day. By the way, that doesn't actually mean that you have to stand physically for 12 hours in a day. It just means that you have to like stand a bit and move around for about a minute every hour. So for 1 minute per hour. So you can tell the watch that, okay, I just want to do it for 6 hours in a day, and that's fine. So that is a feature here. So, you know, at least that's good. Maybe they're actually acknowledging that sleep tracking requires you to change these habits and to close all your three rings. You should make some concessions. So here you go.
Possibly.
Enjoy the discount. So yeah, that was a pretty well, good thing to see. At least in the Series 6 there are some new features. But this year again, it's been a slightly quiet year in terms of Apple Watch updates as well. The hardware was not terribly exciting. I still remember like when I first saw that swim proof Apple Watch. I think it was the Series 3 which was swim proof. I don't remember exactly which one, 2 or 3, one of those it was. But when I first saw that announcement, I was like, man, this is a game changer. Now I can take the Apple Watch and I can swim with it. And, you know, I can basically, at that time I was training for my half marathon and I was swimming also on the side. Just because if you run too much, you can get injuries. Because mostly in cities, we run on the road and that's like a hard surface. So for some people, it's great. For many other people, it leads to a lot of injuries if you like overtrain. So when you're not able to run, you can do cycling, which is not as impactful. And the best one actually is swimming. So at that time, I was really, really happy to see that. And I used that feature a lot. But
show off.
yeah, true that actually. That was a great year for me. I completed my half marathon in like 1 hour and 58 minutes, 21 kilometers. Well, I hope to do that again at some point. Right now, I'd be able to do maybe 21 meters in that time. Or maybe that's a bit too much. But anyway, so that was a game-changing feature for me. Since then, I'm not entirely sure if I felt that excited about a watch update, if I'm being honest. Like, even now, I think that I would be perfectly happy if you gave me a Series 3, you know, at a slightly lower price, obviously. But I would be very happy with that watch, too.
But then, it has that square display. Who likes that?
Yeah, true. The Apple Watch SE is there, so I can spend $5,000 more and get that to avoid the square display now.
There's actually a 10,000 difference. It's 20,900 for the Series 3.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's
I think around 15,000 it would have been the right price for it, considering it's such an old model compared to the new ones available.
Yeah, and you know what? I honestly feel that Apple Watch's starting prices are not something you should look at. Just because it's the one that gets reported initially, that it starts at X price. I honestly think that it's a bit misleading because the smaller variant, right, it has low battery life. Yes. And I don't like it. Like, I would rather get the bigger one for that battery life.
So, yeah, and plus the Series 3 has the old sizes of 42 and 38.
Yeah, and the... Well, can I call it a bezel? Because it's a smaller display, so there are like some borders on the side. So, yeah, that's again. Once you move to the bigger one, now you're not going back to the smaller one. Right now, I have the 44mm Series 5. So
same. I have Series 4 though.
Yeah, there's not much of a difference between those two, right? It's just always on display, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
ECG is also there on the Series 4.
It is.
So, yeah, so I think that if you give me a Series 3, apart from the display, I would be very happy with it because it was a pretty good Apple Watch.
And I mean, if you're using it as a fitness device, then sure, it works great. But if you know, you actually want to interact with it and, you know, maybe develop apps for it or whatever, it's a very old watch.
Yeah, true that. And if I'm not mistaken, the cellular variant of that, I'm not entirely sure if it can do calls and other things properly. I'm not sure at this point. I should just stop talking because I don't remember what happened with Series 3. It's been like so long ago. And
exactly. And yeah. I don't think Apple is selling the cellular version anyway because they only list the GPS version there.
Yeah, true that. So there's, you know, thank you for saving me really on that one.
You do get new colors and new bands this year though.
Yeah, that's good to see. But once again, like, I'm not too excited about it because this is the kind of year where that would go as a luxury purchase for me. So if I look at the prices of these original Apple Watch bands, it's not something that I would buy in 2020. That's all I'm going to say about it.
It's not something I would ever buy because the one that I really like, the Solo braided band, is $100 there, which is about 10,000 over here. And spending 10,000 on just the band.
Yeah, you could get half a Series 3 for that price. Two bands or a Series 3, 38 millimeters. Which one would you have? I think the answer is two bands, man. Those bands are nice though. I really like those bands.
They are. MKBHD did his Series 6 video and he's got a really nice red colored watch with a band on it, the Solo braided one. It looks really good.
Yeah, one thing's for sure though, if I ever buy the Apple Watch, any Apple Watch from now on, I would definitely pick the product red version. I like it quite a bit. I've always liked all the product red products that they have at the market. I think the iPhone was the first one that I really wanted. Then since then, I think I've just had an affinity towards those because they do a very classy shade of red, which I don't mind. I mean, Anyway, if you think about it, in Formula One, I like Ferrari for reasons that I'm not going to specify on this podcast. In MotoGP, I like Ducati. In football, I like Arsenal. So that red color.
I can
color,
see your pattern there.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, the only place where I don't like the red color is when I'm at a traffic signal. So anyway, so yeah, the product red edition definitely does look very appealing to me. So that's the one I'd
probably even the blue get. Color is nice. I really like the blue one.
Yeah, in general, though, I would say that they've been really on the ball with all these customizations for that. They've understood that while it is a fitness product, it is also a fashion accessory for a lot of people. And for accessories, in general, for accessories, the profit margins are much higher than they are for the actual product. So,
yeah.
If you think about it, like you said, na, 10,000 rupees or whatever for that one band, the solo band, the braided one, how much do you think it would cost to like manufacture that versus like what they are selling it at? That's a huge profit. I'm pretty sure like it's a big business for them. And that's fair enough. I mean, it's not like the bands that you get with the Apple Watch by default in the box. It's not like they're bad or something. These are anyway something that you would say is a luxury purchase, right? So at that price point, like they would be competing with other fashion accessories. Like I was just checking, like once I went to the US when I was in last year only, I was covering WWDC. So
when you could travel.
Yeah, when we could travel. And at that time, I just went to some like restaurant over there to eat. And right next to it, there was a Gucci store. And someone I know who was also traveling with us at that time, went into the Gucci store and came outside with something. And I asked them the price. It was, you know, basically just a pair of shoes. And they had spent something like $1,100 on a pair of shoes. And I was told that that's pretty normal for that brand. So I'm thinking the world of fashion, it operates on a different level, and it's good that Apple has realized it and is able to make money off it. I'm not going to say that, okay, no, this is too expensive and people should not be paying this. If you want to look at it as a fashion purchase and get it, no one is forcing you to get that. But at the same time, we can pick up these bands, duplicate ones, for like, what, $500, $100 online?
Yeah, they're about $500 on Amazon.
Yeah, so there you go. There's always that choice, right, for people. Yeah. Anyway, so if you had to get an Apple Watch today, which one would you get? SE 6 or Series 3?
I have the Series 4 with me, and like you mentioned a few minutes ago, that sometimes I put it in the charger and forget to wear it again. So right now, I wouldn't get a watch, but if I had to, it'd probably be the SE.
Yeah, same. I mean, I would want the SE 44, which would be at, I think, 45,000 rupees. But if you force me to buy it today, it would probably be the Series 3 42. And that too, I think I would call my friend who has been wanting to sell their Apple Watch. And one of the official Apple resellers, they have a trade-in thing where you can give like the old one and get a new one for a discount. And they were giving them, I think, some 5,000 rupees for the Series 3. And I was ready to offer 6,000 and get that. So that's where I'm at. But no, honestly, the Series 3 42 I still think offers great value for fitness. The display is small, but I really can live with that. The newer products are very, very nice to have. I really want them, but at this point I can't justify spending that much money on them. Maybe, you know, with a slight discount I would be more willing to spend that much. I think at 30,000 the SE 44 would be a great one. That's the price that I'm willing to pay.
The Series E.
Yeah. Or special edition. Or I don't know what it is at this point. But yeah. Hopefully they update it every year and not once in 4 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway. So let's move on to the iPads. So 8th Gen and iPad Air 2020 is what I'm going to call it. So I think the more exciting update for me was definitely the iPad Air 2020. It's
of course
got like now 70-80% of the features of an iPad Pro at a price which, you know, is not eye-watering, I would say. I think around 50,000, right? The
yes.
price of the iPad Air. Honestly, like if you look at the Pro's price, Pro was what, at 60,000 or something? 60 or 70,000, if I'm not mistaken. And getting it at a lower price with that, well, you don't have Face ID on this one, right? You have that power button touch ID thing on this iPad,
which in today's day is actually better because you don't have to take the mask off. And
yeah, definitely I would say that. Then secondly, on this iPad, you get the A14, is it Bionic? I think it is Bionic chip, which is supposed to be shipping on the iPhone 12 series.
12, yeah.
Yeah, so that's another really good thing. So I've been actually thinking about switching to the iPad as my primary device for a very long time. And I
Hi,
think
VTG.
not yet there. I don't think I'll be able to write some 30,000 word reviews of iOS every year. Like, I really don't know how he does it. That guy is just like a machine. But yeah, mad respect for that. Anyway, so I think I did try to switch to the iPad Pro 10.5 briefly, which was about a year and a half in duration. And in that time, I found myself returning to the Mac for podcasting. But otherwise, most of my tasks I think I could manage. Photo editing and all still I would do on the Mac, like resizing quickly, things like that. But at that time, this whole iOS ecosystem, I don't think it was this mature, if I can call it that, with all the automations and other stuff that have come in recently.
Yeah.
So,
My case is completely different. I would still want an iMac, or I would still want a Mac, no matter how good the iPad gets. Because, like, I've been using the Mac for a little over a decade now, and, like, from the very early on, I got used to the world of apps on a Mac, and I started using them very frequently. So, I have this workflow, I have this habit of using apps together simultaneously, and doing my work. So that is something that I can pretty much never do on an iPad.
So, I don't know, like in a lot of use cases, right, I feel that the iPad is more convenient, but now that I'm sitting and working from home, I don't think I would give up the Mac.
Because I have the 10.5-inch iPad Pro from a few years ago, and
Yeah.
I've tried using that as my primary device, but there's always some use case where I think, okay, I'll just do this on the Mac. And as soon as the thought hits, it's like there's no point of considering making it your primary device if there's always that but that'll come in.
Yeah, true that. So I'll tell you, like, I had the exact same iPad with the smart keyboard cover accessory for a long time. It was an Apple review unit that we had for about a year, and I did write a review, and I did write a few other pieces around it. It had become my primary writing device, even though I had my Mac at that time, simply because it is much easier to carry around. The keyboard was really nice. I liked it quite a bit. It had its limitations. Yes, I would have liked a larger keyboard. But for that form factor, it worked pretty well. I remember sitting in the local train and writing some articles, which is definitely very inconvenient if you have the Mac, even the MacBook Air 13-inch. So I really like that. So with the iPad Air 2020, I think if this was a normal year where I was going out and I needed a portable device where I can do most of my work, I would definitely pick that. For some use cases, I would still come back to the Mac. For example, recording this podcast, my mic has a USB Type-A connector. I'm not going to sit and invest, some more in cables and trying to find the optimal setup for the iPad, including the apps and everything. I'm not going to change all of that just for this. So, yeah, if this was a normal year, I would definitely want that a lot. And it's frankly just hilarious to see that the A14 chip is on the iPad before it's on the iPhone. Like, I don't think I would have. And if a year ago you had told me that this is going to happen, I'd have really laughed at you and I would have told you that you've lost your mind. So, yeah, it's just like crazy to see this in this year.
The whole device, it's a damn good device that they've released. It's very close to the iPad Pro than it is to the 8th generation iPad, and spending that 15, 16,000 more on the iPad Pro doesn't make sense for most people today.
Yeah, definitely. I am completely in agreement with you. I think this iPad also gets the USB Type-C port. It gets support for all the accessories, including the smart keyboard cover and the second generation Apple Pencil, which is a big thing for a lot of people. The difference between the two generations is that the first generation can be charged in that weird way. It has a lightning connector and you plug it into the lightning port and it charges. It looks like an extension, like your iPad becomes a sword or a knife of some kind. And it's really, let's just say, a bit clunky looking. And the second generation one has this nice little magnet which attaches to the side of the iPad and it charges with that. No wires involved, no odd connectors involved. As long as the iPad has some battery, it can charge the Apple Pencil. So it's more convenient, it's definitely better in many ways. And it's also slightly more expensive, but let's not get to that, because those who really want an Apple Pencil, for them that price is honestly not much if you compare it with similar tablet drawing devices and other things that, you know, you get for various computers. Yeah. So because of all of these things, I am completely in agreement with you when you say that, you know, there's not too many reasons anymore to get the iPad Pro. And especially if you think about it, the iPad Pro now has a slightly, well, inferior processor, if I may call it. I don't think I've seen the exact numbers here. But the newer processor is on this one. Probably more battery efficient also. So these things, they count, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a pretty good device, one that I would love to have. But at this point, I still don't think that, you know, it is fully ready to replace a Mac yet. But definitely as a portable productivity device, I do see the value. Like now that I'm using an iPad mini every single day, I know that the app ecosystem is there to give me what I want. As a gaming device, I love it. I absolutely love it. I still think that in India, the iPad is the best portable gaming device you can buy. Things like Nintendo Switch and other portable handhelds are available in India if you really want to buy them. But again, paying 4,000 rupees or so for games, at least physical ones, or the latest games that you want to buy, all first-party titles, 3,000 to 4,000 rupees, not very cheap. And the indie stuff is also there at slightly cheaper rates, but you can't beat the pricing that you get on iOS. iOS does have a lot of excellent games. So for a lot of use cases, the iPad does make a lot of sense. But the iPad Air 2020 was just one of two that was released, right? The other one is also something we should not forget much. The iPad 8th gen. So you think that...
Do we really have to?
So I actually have the 7th gen iPad at home. I have the iPad mini and the iPad 7th gen.
I have an iPad. I forget what generation it is.
Yeah. So with the 7th gen, my problem was that it still has the A10 chip, which is, I think, the iPhone 7 chip. Maybe some evolved version of that. Because usually these iPads get a slightly better... processor than the corresponding iPhone, because I think there is, I'm not an expert here, but I think they can give a little more powerful chip. It comes in about 6 to 8 months after the original, and there is more thermal headroom as well. Like the device will be able to take in a little bit more performance, has a bigger screen and a bigger battery. So for a lot of reasons, they are able to do it, and they do give a slightly better version. But I'm not entirely sure if that's true for the iPad 7 gen as well. So yeah, my complaints mainly with that device were that the display is not laminated on the 7th gen iPad. I don't know if they fixed it on the 8th gen. Don't think they have. And it has the A10 chip, the 7th gen iPad. But this time around, they've given an A12, I think, which is the iPhone XR series processor.
Around that, I think.
Yeah, so that is again a good thing in my opinion. Apart from that, anything else noteworthy about that iPad? Do you remember?
No, I don't think so.
Man, you clearly are very enthusiastic about iPads, I can see. Yeah.
It makes for a good casual device, but then that's all. Like, I don't know what else, how seriously you can take that.
I'll tell you what, the iPad, I was not using all that much until the lockdown began. Once it did, right, for some time initially, I was not able to figure out how to finish my work on time, and I was always working. I think for the first month, it took me a lot of time to just know that, okay, no, listen, I have to stop working right now, and, you know, I can log out at 7, 8 p.m. and the work can carry over the next day. It really took me some time to adjust to that when your workplace becomes your home as well. So, and that time I realized that, okay, my food breaks are the like one time when I'm actually not occupied and I'm not interested in doing any work. So I started watching a lot of movies on the iPad, just sitting there eating and watching. And I also started playing some games on the iPad, lots of turn-based games you can play while eating. You don't exactly have to have your hands on the device all the time. So
they also added controller support in the last OS version, right?
The controller support was already there. The new thing is that it supports the PlayStation and Xbox controllers. Not all of them. Like the PS4 controllers work. I think the official DualShock 4 controllers work. Yeah. But for Xbox, you have to have a more recent version. Like I think Xbox One S onwards. If you have the older Xbox One controller, it doesn't work. Because I have that and it doesn't work. I'm still crying. So yeah, so the like if you really want to game on that device, it's a pretty good device. And the battery life is another underrated aspect of the iPad. Like
Yes,
I use both
that I do agree
devices.
with.
I have an iPhone 7 and I have that iPad mini, and you know I know which device I charge 3 times a day. It is definitely not the iPad. So
I used to have an iPad mini that I didn't really use that often, as you can tell. And there have been times where I used to keep it in the drawer and, open the drawer 4 days later and it would still have this almost the same battery that it had when I put it in, which was back then was very surprising.
yeah, and also not having to constantly look for networks in weak network areas, which is pretty much 90% of all places in India, that does help quite a bit.
True.
Yeah, but I really like the iPad. It's a great device. I'm happy that they're updating iPads at this frequency. It's not, you know, getting neglected completely. But at the same time, I am sad that they have not updated the iPad Mini or the iPad Pro. Pro will probably get updated at some point in the near future, because they really can't be selling a Pro that is not on the latest generation processor. That's I think at this point we've established that. But
Yeah, I
the
mean,
Mini, I'm not sure.
if they've made the iPad Airs so good in this release, I wonder what they do next with the iPad Pro because it still has like A12 processor in it now.
I don't know. Do you think their Apple Silicon plans are why they are not updating the iPad Pro? Is there like any theory we can come up with around that?
I don't think so.
It should theoretically not
Unless.
affect the plans, right? Because the way I'm seeing things, MacBooks will be at that 1 lakh plus price point, and everything below that will be iPads.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'll be fun to see. I still think the iPad Pro will be updated this year.
This year?
I don't see any reason why it should not be. Because it's been a while, right, since they launched it.
I think around Feb or March next year is when they'd update it.
But it is going to happen for sure. I don't think they're going to just let it lie in the dust at this point, after spending so many years talking about the productivity features of the iPad and what it can do and how it can now run Adobe apps and all that. Not updating the Pro or just suddenly forgetting about it, I don't think it ties in with that strategy. But at the same time, I am going to say that the iPad Mini, it's not looking great for it right now.
Yes. You know what they will do about the iPad Pro though? They'll introduce a version with the nano texture glass on it and charge $500 for it.
Well, I'm all for those things, you know, actually. Even if they do that on day one, at some point it's going to get cheaper and it's going to come to the cheaper iPads. Like, the only reason we have A12 on the most affordable iPad right now is that at some point it was expensive and the part became cheaper over time, and they're able to give it at a 30,000 rupee price point, right? So I'm looking forward to that happening. With the iPad Mini, that's what I like. It has a really good processor in the device, and I think it is the A12 only on the iPad Mini, if I'm not mistaken. So again, that's a pretty powerful device, pretty
The
portable.
iPad 5th generation, right?
Yeah, the latest one they released
Yeah,
last year.
A12. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a pretty powerful processor. I've run all kinds of games on it and had no problems. Even now, there's no lag or stutter on it, which is a good thing. Whereas my iPhone 7, I really can't say that. I think at this point, the lack of much RAM is definitely hurting my iPhone. Poor fellow.
My problem with Apple is that, they leave these devices as it is and don't update them, but then the prices also stay the same. So you have like a 3-year-old device that is so, sold at almost the same price that it launched at.
Yeah, that well, earlier we used to have it, na, like every year the device's price would go down proportionally. Yeah, at this point they have not been doing it. But if they do that, na, then that's a clear sign that it's not going to be updated.
Yeah.
If the fact that its price is still the same, I'm going to just hold on to it as hope that the iPad Mini also gets updated. Well, I don't know. I'm just attached to that device, man. It's been a big part of my life in the last 6 months. I really, really like it. So, well, here's hoping things change on that front. So, anyway, I think this has been a, well, long and in-depth discussion. So, it's a good time to end this one. And I think I will be back to asking you to join us on the podcast when they launch the iPhones, Prashant.
Right next month.
Yeah, right, next month. It's like, I think I've been chasing you since 2016 to be on the podcast, and finally you show up on 2020, and it's like thrice in a year, man. That's like a record. So, yeah.
Years too many more.
Yeah, hopefully. Let's see how that goes. It's only like, what, 237 episodes of the podcast. So, you know, if you can make it to 10, that would be something. 10 before 300, that's the challenge that I have for you.
In that case, I'll hope that Apple has more events.
Yeah, I mean, we can do 2-3 podcasts, right? If they launch too many products like they did this time, we should have done one for Apple Watch alone, one for iPad alone, which would have been a lot of silence from you.
Sure, if the podcast audience likes it, why not?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I would like to experiment with. So next time around, you guys can look forward to a podcast where we talk about the iPhone 12 first, the AirPods Studio in a separate episode, Apple Silicon Max in a third episode, and, well, the Tile or whatever other products that Apple launches, that in a fourth one. So, yeah, we'll get to that 10 number before 300 episodes, yeah?
For sure.
For sure. Okay, then. So I guess that's all for this week's episode of Orbital. We'll be back with one more episode next week. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Gadgets360. And you can also subscribe to this podcast, rate it, review it on any podcast app of your choice. And one other thing, if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com. And if you want to reach Preshit, I think Twitter is the best place, right?
Yes, at Preshit on Twitter, Preshit.
Yes, so that is how you reach him. And, well, you can send him your comments as well. He's, I think, more than happy to reply to you on Twitter.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back next week.